Good evening. My name is Alisa Thomas, and at the present, I am the chairman of the Board of Education for Kane County Schools. I want to thank all of you for being here tonight, panel members. I especially want to say a thank you to you for giving up your time tonight, for agreeing to be a part of this. We have teachers, we have supervisors of Kane County Schools, we have parents, we have community members, and we have community leaders here tonight on these panels. I want to thank the Kane County School Board members, all five are present tonight, as well as Mr. Curtis. I want to thank, as I look across the crowd tonight, I see lots of teachers and staff members from the schools here, bus drivers, and we want to say thank you for being here. We appreciate what you do day in and day out. In the last 2 years, probably have been the most strenuous ever in the field of education. And so we thank you for all the work that you do day in and day out. I want to thank the audience for being here. All of you tonight are here to show support on whatever opinion or item that you're about. And we appreciate it. Because we should be one community together working for the students. That should be our goal here. Everyone in this room, everyone in this team. But thank you for being here. We know that there's been a lot of talk, and people want to talk more. This is not exactly what this night was designed for. This was to begin the process of getting community feedback from different stakeholders in our community, including our educators and our supervisors. But because we do know that you guys want to have a voice, we want you to. And we know that some of you do not feel comfortable sending emails, we also understand that. That is why we wanted to announce from the get-go tonight that we are going to have an open conversation with the community, because that is what has been requested. You showed that tonight by your presence here. At our next workshop, which is Tuesday, September the 7th, at 6 p.m., we are going to move back to the Mary Graham Regional Cafeteria. Miss Emily, I hope that that's okay. We are going to be moving back to the cafeteria at Mary Graham to have more space. We will conduct our workshop business in the first part of that session, and the second part of that session will be open to the public to have public comments to the board. It will be civil, we hope, and we will have it organized. But we do want to hear from you. I want you to hear that. We want to hear from you. For those of you that are here tonight that sent emails this week or text messages or make phone calls, thank you. I appreciate it. If I have not gotten back in touch with you, I will. I promise. With that being said, and with that announcement being made, thank you again. I'm going to turn things over tonight to Cody Bailey. He's going to facilitate and guide the roundtables through what we're going to be discussing tonight. And I want to thank you for being part of this. Thank you, Cody.
All right, good evening, everyone. And like the chairman said, thank you all for being here tonight to discuss the restructuring of the Kane County school system. This is a topic that is of the utmost importance to our current and future students and the citizens of Kane County. With that being said, I'd like to point out that at the purpose of tonight's roundtable discussion is to help come up with ideas and solutions to the issues that we in the county currently face. While I know that some of the topics we'll discuss tonight have been heavily and sometimes equally debated, over the last several months, it is my hope that tonight we can focus on working together to propose solutions that will be for the betterment of our county. So, with all that being said, here are some of the topics we'll discuss tonight. So, as you can see, a four round table forum. Each table has 8 people consisting of community members, parents, and current and past students, like the chairman said. 5 topics for the evening. So a topic for table discussion will be read aloud, that I'll be reading aloud. After it is read, I will begin a 10-minute timer. When that time is called, discussion will cease, and we will move on to the next topic. After the table discussion, each table moderator will deliver a 2 to 3 minute summary of highlights from the table conversation. We ask that the crowd stay off the gym floor, please, and quiet as possible at the table and the panels so that we can hear them interacting, okay? This is a night for discussion, brainstorming, and ideas to be shared among these panels. This is not a night for heated arguing, and debate. As has been stated, please remain calm, civil, and kind, as we are the example of the students of King County. If things are not kept orderly and a warning will be given, if things do not return to order after the warning, the board has the right to have individuals leave the gym and or have the gym entirely cleared of everyone but the panel members. So, current time, 6:37. So before we begin, I'll give y'all a couple of minutes at the table. Before we begin, just introduce yourselves, talk about what you do in the community, and introduce yourselves to each other at your table, okay? No, just at the table.
They are the employees of the 300 plus families of Cannon County. responsible for managing the budget. There's really two sides to their responsibility. One is the business side and the other is the academic side. Responsible for knowing and understanding the laws and requirements of a state school system.
Thank you, table two. Karen, can you read?
We have some very similar responses. Our table said that they are non-political, that the school board members are to provide whatever resources that the educators and education system needs. They should create a plan for the future of the school system. They should hold everyone in the school system accountable. They should hold the administrator responsible for test scores, with that administrator being the director and then the principals become the director. That school board members should be in touch with the schools they represent. School board members should represent not only their area, but the entire community. They are in charge of the budget. They should be trained about education policies and the procedures and processes of education. They need to make policies to govern the education system. They should be responsible for the configuration of schools. And they should be responsible for making sure that test scores are continually improving. And then our school board member told us that she's here to serve the educators and the community. She's an advocate for the kids. She puts policies in place to maintain excellent education for our students, including the budget. She has one employee to the director, and what she and all that does is that we hold him accountable to lead our schools in the very best way for every student and every member of the education.
And Jeremy, take it forward, please.
Our table discussed many of the same things as the previous, but we did mention that the board should work to guide our schools and our school leaders in making decisions that are best for children and our teachers and all employees in the school, even when those decisions are unpopular. But they have to represent, again, the voters in their district, their communities. Their job is to make sure that everyone feels represented, both large and small communities. They have to collaborate with the director as well. Along with guiding him, there has to be an effort of collaboration because they're not in the schools every day, so they have to have a knowledge of what goes on, and that knowledge does come primarily from the director, as well as from you all as stakeholders, parents, leaders. And also they have to help guide us into the vision that we have for Canyon County Schools, which means that we have to have vision. Where do we want to go and how do we want to get there?
All right, thank you, table four. So our second topic for the night. In comparison to the other similar school districts and school districts in our area, some consider Canyon County Schools to be limited in the ways available to our students. What are some areas, academic or extracurricular, that you would like to see grow or completely added to Canyon County School District in order to promote excellence, meet students' needs in the present, and better prepare our students for their future? We'll have 10 minutes to discuss this topic.
Meet students' needs in the present and better prepare our students for the future. Our table shared that we'd like to see more awareness of the dual enrollment for college credit. We had initially said we'd like to see that, but found out that that is available, but we'd like to just maybe create more awareness around that. Skills training or trade school for things like plumbing, electricians, landscaping, and so forth. A stronger arts education for music, chorus, theater, and art. Middle school students seem to be the ones really missing out. They need higher math levels, language classes, and computer training. Currently, our athletics have limited resources, especially in the middle school grades. Life skills training, which would include personal finance, bookkeeping, letter writing, resume writing, and interview skills.
All right, thank you, table number two. Table number three, Ms. Mary Lee.
The areas that our table identified as needs to grow in our system is improving teacher salaries to ensure that teachers will stay here instead of looking into outside counties for employment, more college prep classes, better offerings for students, hiring more teachers to be able to offer things such as vocational training, and we also mentioned cosmetology, HVAC, welding, focus on teaching kids that vocational training requires smart people. The conversation we had is sometimes students do that because they think they're not smart enough for college, and we need to make sure that students know that vocational education is for smart kids, and those jobs require a lot of brain power. The same focus on college track and vocational training, financial management classes for students, and more things to prepare them for parts of the real world to make it out, more specialized music and art at the high school, more trade classes, more focus on specialized classes in the middle grades, such as CTE, music, art, and classes that will offer high school credits, more equitable time between students and teachers at all schools, and more offerings for students who may not be athletes.
Table number four.
So our table also mentioned offering music and arts education, particularly drama, band, specialized art classes beyond just what they're receiving now at the elementary level, graphic design, 3D design, those types of things. Today, ROTC, and the ability for those things to start as early as possible, not just here at the high school level. We are currently offering some CTE career and technical opportunities to our middle grade students, but at the present time, those only occur 2 to 3 days a week at most. We'd like to see those opportunities extended so that those students would receive those every single day of the week. More certified early interventionists for students at an earlier age. That way we can get students back on track as early as possible. More athletics at early grades. My desire to see Camp Young known for something beyond just girls basketball, but there are opportunities for students to participate in volleyball, soccer, golf, tennis, all those sports that we offer here in the high school at an earlier age so that those students can become specialized in those as well. Algebra 1 offered to 8th graders, again, more academic opportunities for them in math and science, English language arts. Also, one of our table members mentioned the need for a district social worker. That way our district doesn't have to turn to outside sources for those students who are desperately in need for those opportunities.
Thank you. Table number four. Table number four.
But also health education, more health care. related type topics. More guidance counselors, first assistants, RSO officers, and schools. As far as extracurricular activities, we mentioned many of them to give students an option that may not be a basketball player or football player. Sports such as wrestling, archery, track, but also band, science club, and different options for kids that do not want to participate in sports. Social work also became a topic conversation with the Denver Nine and having something on staff for a while.
All right, thank you, moderators. Our third topic for the night. For years, there have been much debate on how our school district is structured as far as actual facilities and campuses. Most recently, there has been talk of a three-school system. However, outside of this, there are many options, some of which include middle school. What are some of the most promising structure options for our students in your opinion? What are the pros and cons of these options? We've come to the end of our panel of topic number three. Please wrap up your discussion today. And at this time, I'm going to ask table number three to please present first.
School, middle school, and other somewhere between 1 to 3 elementary schools seemed to be the best option that we thought as far as structure was concerned.
Item number one, please.
We took a slightly different approach. We basically looked at two different options. One, keeping all 7 buildings, but making one of them middle school, and the other one going to a preschool system. I think we felt majority of the table that middle school was needed. Mr. Cameron stated that we don't believe that the previous question can be met in the current structure. A couple of the pros we had for keeping 7 buildings was one, just legacy. Everybody's tired of their school in this area. Another one would be, by doing that and then going to a middle school, teachers 6th, 7th, 8th grade to really specialize in subject. Con is, not as equitable. Unless we did some serious rezoning for students, you're always going to have schools that are much smaller than the others. And it's financially very difficult without passing some serious tax increases or things like that. It just does not seem possible. In the preschool system, pros were people, it would attract people to move into our district. The flip side of that is, it was brought up that quite a few people would be moving out of our district. Bullying was also a problem, as the schools would be larger, there'd be more students in a school, not necessarily in a classroom, but just in general in the building. And the student-teacher ratio, we're not quite sure what that would look like in the preschool system. We think that, the teachers could socialize better, we could offer more opportunities. And I think that, we talked about the middle school offering more opportunities than what we currently offer.
Item number 2. We came up with a few options. One was, rather than build a new middle school, put middle school in Woodbury Grammar and rezone Woodbury Grammar into existing elementary schools. Another option was to rezone to provide equity of number of students at each location to maximum capacity. If rezoning creates vacant space at one location, utilize this location for CTE. Utilize Woodland and Westside as middle schools and rezone elementary students to disperse to other locations. So those were some of the structuring ideas that came out of our table. Pros of consolidating schools would be teacher-to-student ratio equity, as others have mentioned. Teachers could specialize and improve academics, increase resources, security with the SRO office or SRO at fewer locations. Cons of consolidating, concerns for vacant buildings from a cost and vandalism standpoint and loss of property values in the respective communities. And then another con was cost of keeping 7 schools open is also concerning. And then we kind of play devil's advocate with ourselves. We talk about security, safety, and transportation also being a con. What was the pro?
All right, thank you, Chase. Our fourth topic for the night, educators are the most valuable resources for students. They are in the trenches with our students day in and day out. In many cases, they provide the safest place to those that they teach. With the demands of the classroom and the added responsibilities that have come their way in recent years, teachers' effectiveness and burnout have come into question. Allow the teachers at your table to share their experiences and concerns from the classroom. For just a few minutes, please. Then brainstorm together ways that some stress and pressure could be alleviated from our Kent County teachers. All right, we've reached the time limit for topic number 4. Topic number four was educators are the most valuable resources for students. They are in the trenches with our students day in and day out. In many cases, they provide the safest place for those that they teach. Within the demands of the classroom and the added responsibilities that have come their way in recent years, teacher effectiveness and burnout have come into question. Allow the teachers at your table to share their experience and concerns in their classroom for a few minutes, then brainstorm together ways that some stress and pressure could be alleviated from our Marquette County teachers. At this time, I'm at the table number four to present.
We began our discussion kind of back at our discussion from the previous topic regarding teacher equity, because my table members wanted me to make sure that I stressed that in our comment about the fact that we don't always have equitable class sizes on our elementary schools, that just because a teacher at one elementary school may have 30 students and a teacher at another may have 12 in that same grade, it becomes many times that those teachers in those smaller schools are carrying on more responsibilities outside of the classroom due to the lack of staff at those. So in regards to that, that leads to a lot of burnout for those teachers in smaller schools. We also talk about the number one thing that teachers are burned out in Camden County about is pay. We want to see our pay comparable to districts of the same size as us. But one thing we did talk about is that many times in Camden County we fall into the trap of always comparing ourselves to our neighbors in Rutherford County. But we can't fall into that trap. We're not Rutherford County, we're not comparable in size. And if we do that, we're constantly going to be in this conversation that just really is not productive. So if we're going to do that, we need to compare ourselves to districts of our size and look at our pay. Right now, our teacher pay scale in Camden County tops out at 20 years. So we have teachers that have been teaching around 10 years, 7, 8 years, who really are making almost the same amount as teachers in our district who have fought for 35 or 40 years because those teachers topped out at 20 years on our pay scale. So perhaps taking our pay scale and restructuring it so that teachers are being paid over the course of 4 years of service. And then we want to see more specialists so that teachers don't get burned out trying to do too many things in the classroom. That could be RTI specialists, but also gifted specialists so that our higher achieving students are having their needs met as well. But we want to see those specialists be certified interventionists, people who are trained and specialized to offer those services, not educational assistants. And then the last thing we talked about was the majority of teachers in Camden County are here because it's home. We don't want to teach anywhere else. If we leave Camden County schools, it's not going to be to go teach somewhere else. It's going to be to leave the profession. But our school board, our communities, and our school leaders cannot continue to take advantage of home bodies. It's not okay to take advantage of teachers who are teaching in our school system because this is where we want to be because we're totally invested in the in all aspects of our students' lives.
Thank you, number one.
The very first stress that came up was not enough subs. Everybody knows what they were going through last year and kind of how this year's starting off. With lack of subs, some teachers are having to cover multiple classrooms during the day. Even split grades, say, having fifth and first graders all in the same classroom because there is nobody else to take. Teachers' pay we brought up comparable to other districts of the size. We are definitely low. Resources are limited compared to other school districts, and our children don't have the same opportunities as some. And then something that I learned about personally tonight was PLCs, personal learning communities. These, as my understanding is a best practice amongst teachers, all of the same grade or similar grades. Because of our structure right now, those are being done after hours and unpaid mostly, and they are required. Extra regular duties like bus duty, launch duty, those types of things were leading to burnout. Basically just lack of enough people to get everything done. And finally, we brought up testing. There are more deaths than I had any idea personally that happened throughout this school year. Most of them state mandated, but found that some are not. So to remove some of these stressors, first thing we said, we need more funding. We can't pay people more, we can't pay aides more, until we have more funds available to pay people. We need to look at removing the non-state required tests, and maybe look at giving the TCAT test at the beginning of the year, and then the same exact test at the end of the year, and use that to measure the teacher's effectiveness in classroom.
Goals so that we know what we're aiming at every year and be better
need that.
All right, thank you, panelists. Topic number five for the evening. The COVID-19 pandemic has completely changed the world in which we live. It has had an enormous impact on education. Learning loss has occurred when the ESSER funds and the government districts are encouraged to make that a focus. What strides would you like to see made to address learning loss? That brings us to the end of the time for topic number five. Again, topic number five was, the COVID-19 pandemic has completely changed the world in which we live. It has had an enormous impact on education. Learning loss has occurred, and with the ESSER funds from the government districts, they're encouraged to make that a focus. What strides would you like to see made to address learning loss? I'm going to turn it to the top table.
Okay, the first question we answered was, what is ESSER funds? And simply put, that is temporary COVID relief funding from the federal government as a three-year plan. Some of the things that have already been done, spending money on tutors, counselors, cybersecurity, intervention specialists, and non-certified faculty. Got a bonus to get them up above the minimum wage. Non-certified faculty would be your janitors, your kitchen staff, aides, secretaries, those kinds of people. The biggest thing that we thought that we should spend money on from this fund is some type of training for parents, students, and teachers on how to log in and actually do your schoolwork. One of the big issues that was brought to the table was last year during COVID when we were doing at-home learning, there was a lot of students that just did not log in. Hard to tell if they were not logging in because they didn't want to, or because mom, dad, grandparent, whoever they were living with, didn't know how to log in and went pulling out. We didn't really come up with a solution on what that would look like, but we did believe it would drive accountability and help moving forward. Intervention aids is also something that we, even though it has been brought up, it has been spent already on, we believe we need more intervention aids to help those students that are falling behind. It was brought up that some schools don't even have a full-time intervention aid. They have a part-time intervention aid, and you just really get what you can get. Progress testing is one of the things that the intervention aids do, and maybe that should come off them. And that progress testing be done by somebody else at the school, such as Lost Learning Coach. This would free the intervention aid up to actually focus on helping that student get caught back up,
and not testing just to see where they're at. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any of the same things are listed in our table. Centralized virtual teachers, dedicated teachers or tutors to assist students in need, learning loss, instructional coaches, non-certified interventionists, curriculum to help identify what standards are missing for each student, and we like the idea that another group mentioned previously of having the students take a TCAP at the beginning of the year and then a TCAP at the end of the year to help assess needs and increase ESC capacity to help students in need.
Title of the group.
Community members started by saying that public is not entirely the responsibility of educators. that parents hold part of the responsibility for helping to close the gap on these learning loss. So the first idea was to create parent partnerships and intervention training. We talked about training them on best ways to use our technology, as well as training them on, or not necessarily training them, but being very informed, communicating with them exactly what learning loss has occurred with their student, and helping them with ideas and strategies to help us, to partner with us, to make sure that those gaps are closed. We also talked about certified teachers for intervention at every school. Not every school does have a full-time certified interventionist, and we are getting additional funding to add to that, but just making sure that every school has a full-time certified interventionist. Fewer assessments and more focused assessments, which would lead to more time for classroom instruction. We do spend a lot of time on assessments at the beginning of the year, and we are just finishing those up right now, so that would give us some more time for classroom instruction. The community members said there's going to be a solution, and it may not be quick and coming, so this may be something we can't expect overnight that we're going to work on as we continue to go through this pandemic. One of the things we talked about was specific learning plans for students, which led to what was the best source of data to use for those learning plans, TCAP benchmarks, and those assessments that we are doing, which could lead to more flexible, being more flexible with grade bands. For instance, teaching students in groups, supporting them missing skills, not necessarily by grade, so that you identify the skills that are missing and then teach a group of students that are all missing that same skill, which might be a little bit more specific and more focused. And a specific virtual teacher for each grade level, and that's a pie in the sky request, but it's real because our teachers are having to do both, so if they can focus on one and they go on the other, that would be a little bit more focused for our students as well. And I have one more, sorry, specific plans, skills for ESP, which are after school program, and then the possibility of making ESP mandatory or making summer school mandatory for students who are missing skills.
Item 4.
One of our team members, fortunate, happens to work in the medical field, and so she brings a very great perspective of this. But something that we all know is that this problem is not going away. It's not going away anytime soon. Facing a new added challenge of now, if we have to close schools because of COVID-related issues, we have to use snow days to do that. That leads to more learning loss. If we're not in the building, then we can't teach kids. And so our fear at our table is that our learning loss this year will likely be greater than the learning loss that students experienced last year. But because of that, we mentioned that we need a long-term plan. And so often in Canyon County, we mentioned, Canyon County tends to be a reactive county. Things happen, and it's how do we react to that? Now, how do we respond? How do we get by? How do we put a band-aid over this? How do we get from one day to the next? We have to change our mindset to become a county and a school system in our regards that is proactive. How do we anticipate what's going to happen and be prepared for that instead of always being reactive? We mentioned the need, as many other tables have, for true virtual teachers to take that stress off of classroom teachers, that they cannot be responsible for teaching those students in class and at home and do both effectively. Our school system, through those ESSER funds, has been able to do some things to address those learning losses, such as adding educational assistants at all our elementary schools. Unfortunately, those will be non-certified positions, so they don't address that need for specialized and certified interventionists. We do have credit recovery that's going to be offered in the near future in the high school 4 days a week, tutoring programs after school at our elementary schools 2 days a week. We had a very successful learning camp this summer that saw lots of learning loss and rest, but that need will continue, so we need to make sure that even into the future, beyond these extra funds, beyond our 3 years, that we can continue to offer these programs that our students are going to so desperately need. This can't just be a 3-year fix, it's got to be a long-term goal for us.
All right, thank you, panel. That brings us to our sixth and final topic for the night. Topic number six, considering the state of the world in which we live, do you feel that Kenny County schools are safe for our students and staff and faculty? Why or why not? What measures do you think should be in place to ensure safety on our campuses? We have reached the time limit for our final topic of the evening. If you don't mind wrapping up your discussions. Again, that topic was, considering the state of the world in which we live, do you feel that Kenny County schools are safe for our students and staff and faculty? Why or why not? What measures do you think should be in place to ensure safety on our campuses?
Before I kind of give out our list, we did have some discussion about what safety means, because safety could be the health and well-being of our students. It could be the physical well-being, the mental and emotional well-being of our students and teachers. It could also be the safety from a building standpoint. So there's a lot of different ways to look at that. But some of the things we listed was having SROs at each school with two at the high school. For the most part, teachers feel safe for their physical well-being, meaning that they have various drills for different emergencies, and they have designated first responders. There are safety assessments done at each location, and that is from a standpoint of, can someone break into the school and those types of things, or can a, you know, like an active shooter, could they access the school? We suggested providing more nurses, guidance counselors, and mental health professionals. There is a concern for bullying and how that's being handled. Concern for health safety with COVID-19 related concerns, and concern for safety of the buildings, with many of our older buildings being up to standards, concerns like asbestos, pests, and so forth.
We talked about the things that are already in place that make us feel safe. For the most part, our family felt like our schools were safe. So we talked about the things that made us feel that way, and the things that we thought might be good to improve. So the things that make us feel safe is the fact that all of our schools have really up-to-date camera systems where you can see in real time the things that are going on in our school. Not only that, but they record, so if we need to go back and see things that have happened in our school, we can do that as well. The fences and the gates that are around our schools, and I'll let you know that some of those are in upgrades this school year. The new door locks and keys, we have new door locks and keys installed, and those keys are very limited, so that makes us feel safe. Our Raptor system, if you are not familiar with that, it is a system at the front of the office where visitors have to present their driver's license, and it will tell us whether or not they are safe to go to our school building. And we had a couple of flags on those. The fact that administrators and teachers know the parents and students by face and name for the most part. The fact that we do consistent drills, those things are expected. Our COVID procedures and the fact that those are shared with parents. All those things make us feel safe. The things that our table recommended was more thorough, that was already mentioned, making sure that bullying reports and procedures were followed through. School bus aides, this was a pretty lengthy discussion at our table because of the fact that school bus drivers have to be disciplined and drivers at the same time. So that was reported as a need. More communication with parents, specifically about lockdowns. I think this is the current topic. But some of the parents may not always know what's going on in school or locked down. So just communication with the parents that all our children are safe, all our students are secure, and maybe not specific about what's going on, but just to let them know that we're good. And one of the suggestions was to not lock down school so much to make students feel more scared. So if they're having to hit a lot of buttons to get to the restroom or going out of locked cafeteria doors. So for the most part, we felt like that the things we have in place do make us feel safe, and we just have those other recommendations. Thank you.
teachers and the staff members felt safe in the schools, and the parents felt that their children were safe as they sent them to school every day. We did already reiterate the point that Ms. Heron made, talk about the need for more transparency between our schools and our parents when there are situations that arise. But we also have to be very mindful and smart in doing that. And sometimes that transparency and that information has to be relayed after the fact, because it is not safest for students for everybody to know the distance of the school at that particular moment. And so we mentioned that we want parents to know that when you send your kids to school every day, their safety is our number one priority. Before anything else, before any kind of learning can take place, students have to feel safe. So if school goes on lockdown, you know, whatever the situation may be, our priority at that moment switches to school, to student safety. And so parents sometimes need to take a deep breath themselves and be confident that the schools will provide that transparency, but we have to be willing to do that as well. There have been many safety concerns and needs in schools that have been met, but one thing we did mention is due to our limited maintenance staff, sometimes when there are safety concerns that arise, those needs don't get addressed immediately as they should be. So when there's a safety concern, wherever it may be, those items have to get pushed to the top of any type of maintenance list. We did mention our need for a uniform emergency response plan across our schools, that every school has the same procedures and policies in place, fire drills, tornado drills, or lockdowns, whatever the case may be, so that if a student transfers from one school to another, or when students come to the high school from the elementary schools, those things don't have to be recalled. We talked about, if there was some kind of catastrophic emergency, would our communications infrastructure in Cannon County be prepared to handle that? It's not a question that we had an answer to, but it's something that we didn't bring up. We also addressed that we would like to see SROs in every school, not necessarily because we felt our schools are unsafe, as we addressed earlier, but more so to allow students and our law enforcement to begin to build positive relationships with one another. It's a friendly face in our schools. We also mentioned the fact that it would be ideal if our Sheriff's Department had its own drug dog that could be used at our schools when needed, and not just at the time when we're able to have one here, such as was the case for our high school, that drug dog could be used at every school then.
And number one.
We started off with generally saying our teachers, parents, and students feel safe in our schools. However, there are things that we feel like we can improve on. SRO office has been brought up frequently to this topic. Currently, there's only one SRO officer for the 6 grammar schools in Arizona High School. We feel like there should be one in each school. Along with that, the SRO officer putting up drug education classes. And we believe that same lines of drugs will need to be more officers. As far as COVID goes, you said a general statement that feels smaller and safer, feels safer and smaller classroom. Another factor at high school could be beneficial. Social workers, that has been brought up many times tonight, various topics. And to address bullying, have education on bullying and accountability. And finally, the last thing we talked about as far as safety for schools is the children that get sent to alternative school because they're in trouble need to be separated and from the rest of the students while they're in alternative school.
All of our topics that were up for discussion tonight. First, we'd like to thank everybody for being here tonight. We'd like to thank our panel members for taking the time out of their busy schedule to be here with us.
you. I'll just reiterate what Cody just said. Thank you all for sitting on these tables tonight, putting time in before you came to be sure you had some things prepared and that you're knowledgeable. I appreciate that. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. I want to remind you about the September workshop on Tuesday the 7th at 6 p.m. And that would be a time where we will have a time for open comments. And we would love for you to think about some of the things you heard here tonight and tell us what you think about them. I do want us to take just a second and look around the room. There's not very many of them here, but there are students from across our county. And here comes some more in the door right now. Some from elementary schools and some from our high schools. I am very happy that they got to witness what transpired here tonight. We educate kids in lots of different ways. And it has been mentioned this week that we are going to educate them tonight in how this took place and how we behaved and how we worked together. If you are a student here in this county, I want you to look at all the people here and all the people on this floor. There are people that are working together to make sure that you have a good education now so you can have a better future. And I just want you to know that, and I thank you for being here tonight. With that, we will close, and we hope to see you on September 7th. Thank you very much for being here.